start by thanking the organizers for putting together this nice workshop and also for giving me the chance to present some work which I did with Miriam Svetic and James Halverson, who is a grad student at Penn, and more recently also with Paul Engecker, where we try to perform a systematic bottom-up analysis of MSSM queries. So I guess we all agree that one major goal of string phenomenology is to mimic the standard model or extensions of it, such as the MSSM, and so realizing the MSSM in a string compactification. So let me just quickly recall some basic features of the MSSM. So we have n equal 1 supersymmetry with the gauge groups SE3 times SE2 times E1. We have the following meta content transforming under these symmetries, and they come in copies of 3. The right-hand neutrino is actually not part of the MSSM, but the MSSM could be easily extended with the right-hand neutrino, and that would give via the seesaw mechanism a nice explanation for the small neutrino masses. The superpotential is given by such an expression, where again, like to explain the small neutrino masses, you need such a Weinberg operator generically, and if you have right-hand neutrinos, then it is effectively induced by the seesaw mechanism. But it could be also generated directly, as we will see later, by the instantons or other mechanisms. There are various other couplings which are also gauge invariant under the gauge symmetries, but which seem to be absent, and they have to be absent, otherwise our proton would be not stable. So that's actually a very strong statement. Should be weakened a little bit. So you can have baryon-violating couplings and lepton-violating couplings separately, but not at the same time. Otherwise, the proton would really decay very quickly. But nevertheless, these should be suppressed compared to the usual Yukawa couplings we have in our super in our standard model. And then there, we observe various hierarchies in the standard model or in the MSSM. So, for instance, I mentioned already that the neutrino masses are much, much smaller than any other meta fields. And then there seems to be a mass hierarchy between different meta families, as well as between the top quark mass and all the other masses. So one question we wanted to address was whether such features can be realized in D-brain compactifications and how they actually can be realized. Okay, so let me start very simple. D-brains. We all know that there are non-perturbative solutions to type 2B, and we also know that a stack of m D-brains gives rise to a unitary n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory, which of course is non-chiral. So in order to get realistic phenomenology, we want to get chirality. And how do we get that? We can either use magnetized brains or D-brains in singularities, or intersecting D-brains, and I will focus on the first thing, or actually the latter thing. So anyway, on intersecting D-brains. So I will talk about type 2A, where the objects are D6 brains, which wrap, fill out the four-dimensional space-time and wrap 3 cycles in the internal manifold. The gauge group already said that it is a unitary gauge group, which further splits into a non-abelian part, and the abelian part is generically anomalous. Chiral matter is localized at intersections of two stacks of D brains and transforms usually as bifundamental. And the multiplicity is given by the number of intersections in the internal space, and can be easily computed by, well, easily, but can be computed by some topological intersection numbers. So we also know that string theory lives in 10 dimensions, so we have to somehow, in order to make contact to the real world, compactify 6 dimensions. A conventional way is to compactify it on the Calabi-Yau threefold. That gives us n equal 2. Then we want to get some gauge theory, so we introduce D6 brains, which are 1/2 BPS objects. So we get n equal 1 supersymmetry. But these D6 brains are also charged on the Ramon-Ramon charges, which in the internal space have to be cancelled. So we need some objects which carries opposite charge, so one could use anti-D6 brains or antifolds. Since we want to preserve n equal 1 supersymmetry, we rather use orientifolds. So we perform an orientifold prediction, which again introduces those 6 planes, I'm sorry, and they exactly carry the opposite charge. Moreover, this orientifold prediction introduces also image brains, which allows us not only to have matter in the bifundamental representation, but also in the symmetric or antisymmetric. And the tadpole cancellation, which means nothing else than cancellation of all the charges, of all the Ramon-Ramon charges, is given by such an expression, which is a condition on the cycles that the six brains wrap. And it implies the usual anomaly cancellation for non-abelian gauge groups. still intersecting these six brain worlds, in order to avoid any tachyons, we usually want to have supersymmetry. So each the six brain stack is a half BPS object, but that they preserve the common supersymmetry, we have to require and that they are all aligned with respect to the orientifold. Okay, good. And I already told you that the intersection of the chiral spectrum or multiplicity of the chiral spectrum is given by some intersection numbers of the three cycles the deep brain stacks wrap in the internal space. Okay, so already said, like for the non-abelian case, tadpole cancellation implies already the anomaly cancellation. But for the abelian part, that's not true. And we need, in addition, there's in addition the Green-Schwarz mechanism, which cancels the anomalies related to these U1s via the Chern-Simons couplings. These couplings make these U1s massive. So in our lower energy effective field theory, what survives is the non-abelian part and maybe some combination which preserves or satisfies this condition as a massless U1. And all the other U1s are global symmetries and survive only as global symmetry and have to be preserved by all perturbative couplings. So in particular, that actually forbids various couplings, which we might want to have.
The reason why you don't put the conjugate of the symmetric and antisymmetric in the first line?
Oh, I'm sorry. That is dumb. OK, I'm sorry. Yeah. So here, I'm counting the fundamentals and underfundamentals when there is an antisymmetric bar or a symmetric bar, then I count that negative. Okay. That wasn't. Yeah, I should have erased that point. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, so how do we actually start? I'm repeating everything now. But we start out, we choose a Calabi-Yau, accompanied with an orientifold plane, orientifold action. Then we start to introduce the six brains in such a manner that we get the desired gauge symmetry and also cancel the Ramon-Ramon charges carried by the O6 plane. And we hope that these six brains intersect in such a way that they kind of resemble the massless sector resembles the MSSM or like whatever gauge whatever spectrum you want to get. So then we apply the Green-Schwarz mechanism and hope also that whatever survived as massless U1 is interpretable as a hypercharge. That is a very non-trivial check. Usually one starts with the party salam in usual model building, and then one knows for sure that the massless U1 hypercharge survives. But otherwise, it's not always clear that the massless U1 is really the hypercharge. or if there's any mass SU1 surviving. Okay, then one computes the whole spectrum, which I've done already before, and one tries to determine the perturbative superpotential by computing some string amplitudes. And that has been done by many groups for toroidal orbifolds, folds, but for generic LRBLs, that's not done because there's so much, not that much known about these special Lagrangians. There's another nice thing about the D-brain compactification, because it allows for a so-called bottom-up approach. So you can actually forget about the global setting, but rather focus on a local setting. And this local setting you can build in such a way that you really get a gauge symmetry, which or a spectrum or a quiver, which is the one you want. So that you can usually always build. It's much easier like to look at the global setting before, instead of like looking at the global construction. Of course, I mean, eventually you want to you hope that you can lift it to a global construction and embed it somewhere, but that's quite tough. And that's why the bottom-up approach is a nice thing, because various questions you can actually answer already in a local setting without worrying too much about global conditions.
Can I just ask,
sure.
In terms of that model, but in terms of localized sets of D6 brains, I mean, how much is, because I know there's kind of quite a lot of like D3, like D3, D7, where you know, the geometric conditions are clear. So what's the,
okay,
like, what's the analog of, say, a collapsible cycle for? For a D6 brain.
Okay, I don't want to even think in that respect. I don't want to say that I give you some cycles. I mean, already that tells you. I know there's this bottom-up approach for singularities, right? That's what you're talking about. There, I have to give you a singularity, then you know what the curve is. I'm not even want to specify anything. What I'm specifying, I'm just saying I have some deep brain stacks, I have some chiral spectrum, and that's it. I don't tell you which cycle they wrap. I don't even have any cycles. So I hope later, basically what I want to do is like I give you a table where I tell you what the chiral spectrum is and how it's going to transform. And I hope that I find some singularity or some intersecting D6 brain setup where I can realize that.
So this isn't kind of local in the sense?
It's ultra local if you want. Yeah, so it's not even specifying any geometry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you do the counting in terms of analogs of intersection numbers.
Yeah, I mean, of course, in a way, when I want to embed that then in some local or global bedding, then this global bedding, these cycles that D-brain is eventually going to wrap, have to satisfy these intersection numbers I give you. But it's not, I don't give you any really geometrical data apart from the intersection numbers, which I want to say. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Nevertheless, it's not like I can do whatever I want, because I told you already that tadpole cancellation, as well as having a massless hypercharge, which I definitely want to have, puts some constraints on the cycles I've read, but that implies also some constraints on the transformation behavior of the metafields. The chiral metal.
So you insist on tadpole cancellation? Because I understand that in many of these local models, that's what people do not do. So they hope this problem is solved once we embed it somewhere.
No, but okay, it's not. Okay, I have to be careful what I want to do. Since I don't have a global embedding, I mean, I cannot talk about really tadpole cancellation, but there's some constraints I have to satisfy. You know, when I write down the field theory, I want to make sure that the non-abelian anomalies are canceled, right? So that I ensure, of course. And there are more than just these conditions. I have more conditions than just that, arising from the tadpole condition.
You mean the anomalies for U1s?
Exactly.
Mm.
And the same normally cancellation. That's what you call it, tadpole cancellation.
I call it tadpole cancellation, but there's also a condition that I have a mass as U1, which is I don't know what the.
If you extrapolate the non-abelian anomaly cancellation for U1, so you get extra conditions, which you probably want to satisfy.
Exactly. Okay. Okay.
Plus condition that you.
Plus a condition that I have a mass as U1, which is also another condition. Okay. All right. So how does it work with the usual superpotential, with perturbative case? In the perturbative case, I basically just compute some string amplitudes and which are usually which are suppressed by Wolschmidt instantons, which is a priori a nice thing because it gives us some observed some of the hierarchies we want to get, right? Potentially. There are two buts though. First of all, to get the hierarchy in the masses as well as the realistic CKM is requires maybe some fine-tuning. But more importantly, there are these global U1s which are still floating around, and they forbid various couplings. So, that's enough. And generic examples are these famous 10-10-5 coupling in SU5 guts, as well as the Majorana neutrino masses, and oftentimes also the mu term is putatively forbidden. But you can induce them by either by higher order couplings, where you assume that signal gets bad, or by so-called d-instantons. Both of these things might give you some hierarchies. Where actually, I should mention, this case is kind of tricky. If you give that a VAF, usually that means a D-brain recombination. So it's not for me the preferred mechanism, right? That could just mean that I recombine various D-brain strengths, right? So in that sense,
if you just have single U1s, but it's true if U1 is part of the non-abelian U1, it's tricky.
Exactly.
But if it's just separate stack of brain with separate anomalous U1s.
Okay, but then I would, in our local setup, I would start right away with another stack, right? Okay, I guess what Mia wants to say. Not sure if that's what you want to say, but let's say I have a four-stack case. And I have here a field, which is the singlet I was talking about. And then I give that a VAF, and this recombines into a new cycle, and then I could start it out right away with the three-stack level, in a way. So, so d-instantons can break these global U1s. So they're basically same objects as D6 brains. They wrap with three cycle in the tunnel manifold, but they are point-like in space-time. And they their action is given by that, so they couple to the axion, and from the axionic shift symmetry under U1 gauge transformation, one sees that the instanton action transforms in such a way, which means that I can actually have a coupling which has some overshooting in these global U1s. This would be perturbably forbidden, but if the instanton is compensating for that, it can be actually induced non-perturbatively. So note that it's not only it actually generates couplings which are not there a priori, but it also gives some hierarchy. Okay. That the instanton has a right charge is a necessary condition to generate a coupling, but as we all know, it's not sufficient. The crucial thing is always looking at these instanton zero modes, which are nothing else than strings going from the instanton and either going to the D brain or strings which start and end at the instanton. So, and in that respect, one distinguishes these two cases. One has these uncharged modes, which are X-ray strings going from the instanton to itself. And there are these universal ones. I'm sorry. The four bosonic ones, which correspond to the breakdown of the Poincaré invariance. And then you have four fermionic zero modes due to the breakdown of the n equal to preserved by the Kalahari threefold. And if the cycle, the instanton wraps, is non-rigid, we might have additional zero modes. And also, if the instanton intersects with its orientifold image, there might be additional modes. At the very end, in the path integral, we have to integrate over all these modes. And if you want to get superpotential contributions from these d instantons, then we want to make sure that we get exactly that kind of measure. So we have four bosonic zero modes and two fermionic. So we want to first require that this thing is rigid. Then it's also, in order to avoid those things, we want to make sure it doesn't intersect with itself, with its orientifold image. And then somehow we have to get rid of these tau bar modes. And if you put the instanton on top of an orientifold invariant cycle, then these tau bar modes actually get projected out. So rigid or one instanton actually carries the right zero mode structure to induce a superponential term. So these are, I mean, there are various other things, such as multi-instanton contributions, which can also, where you can actually lift some of these modes. But this is the most simple case, which can contribute to a superponential.
Engage instantons?
Oh, engage instantons as well.
But you're considering them?
I'm not considering them. Actually, that's a good point. There are also these charged zero modes. And as I've just said, let me first say, clearly they have Dirichlet-Neumann boundary conditions in four-dimensional space-time, because the six-brain wraps fills out the space-time, while the instanton is just a point. And generically, there are no bosonic zero modes. And but generically, I mean, if the instanton doesn't sit on top of a d-brain, if it doesn't intersect, so it intersects with a d6-brain. In case it sits on top of it, then that's what we call the gauge instanton. And indeed, that has also these tau bar modes, but they can get these ADHM constraints, which stop them up. So in case you have, I'm just considering that we really have an instanton which doesn't sit on a d-brain. So we have chiral fermionic zero modes. So if you just quantize the string, you see that there are no bosonic ones, and you get only fermionic zero modes. And here I depicted the transformation behavior as well as the number of these zero modes. So if I have a positive intersection with the instanton and a d-brain stack, then it carries minus charge under this O1 instanton and positive charge under this d-brain. So if you sum them up, all these things, then you see that actually the total charge of the instanton under this U1A is exactly given by this topological intersection which I showed you before. So that's a non-trivial check that we're doing everything right. And since we want to consider here O1 instantons, actually the intersection number even simplifies. I mean, the instanton d-brain sector is identified with the instanton image d-brain sector. Okay, so just to illustrate what's happening, let's look at this example. So I have a field phi, localized at the intersection of brain A and B, and a field psi, and localized intersection C and B. And clearly, I cannot draw a loop here, I cannot generate that coupling. So that forbids like these global U1A and U1C, which I here have in the subscript. So, but an instanton which intersects exactly once with a stack A and once with a stack C can actually, let's see, right? and with the ones with C can induce that coupling. So how does it work? You actually have an interaction term, which is given by that. You can compute that again by just string amplitude computation, which is very similar to the computation you would have in a perturbative regime. And now you integrate over your zero modes, these lambdas, these fermionic zero modes, and you see you pull down this term and you get exactly what you wanted. You get this superpotential term with the suppression given by the instanton. Okay, so much, I mean, I kind of set the stage now for what Miam, James, and also Paul were doing in our paper. So again, we see like various hierarchies in the standard model. So we particularly see that we have three different baskets for the up and down flavor quarks, as well as for the charged leptons. There seems to be a hierarchy between the top quark mass and all other MSS M matter fields. And there's also a large hierarchy between the neutrino masses and all other masses, matter field masses. So we were wondering, I told you already that ball sheet instantons a priori can take care of that, can give a reason, can account for those hierarchies. But again, we will see for these quivers, oftentimes it happens that some of the couplings are perturbatively forbidden.
Neutrinos,
and neutrinos, exactly. Indeed, you're right. So, in particular, if you want to do the seesaw mechanism, as I said, generally the neutrino masses are perturbatively forbidden, Majorana neutrino mass. Okay, so there are two ways how to use these instantons to get such hierarchies. And first one I'll present now. One thing could happen is that all these three families don't appear from the don't originate from the same D-brain sector. So let me do it again with an example. Let's say we have a four-stack quiver with the famous Madrid embedding. Then these left-handed quarks can arise from either the U3, the three. The U3 stack intersecting with the U2 stack, or the U3 stack intersecting with its image U2 stack. So you have two different origins. And here I depicted the global U1 charge under this U1A, U1B. So is that clear what I mean? You have a stack, you have a U3 stack, then let's say you have a U2 stack, and here it's orientifold image, and the QL could sit either here or here. So if you look then, and you know, from many other fields you have also many potential origins, and if you look now at the Yukawa textures, what kind of pattern they take, and you see, in case they all arise from the same sector, the left-handed as well as the right-handed, then you expect that all these entries are going to be of the same order. So generically, you don't expect too much hierarchy here. There's a wall sheet instanton contribution, though. But
so are you talking about large string scales?
No.
That you're suppressed, because one could talk
I said, like, let's say, okay, I want to, I said, Okay, they're the Rolle-Sheet instantons. Indeed, they could give some natural hierarchy. But generically, if one assumes that the Calabi-Yau is isotrope, then you expect all these Rolle-Sheet instantons to be of the same order. And they don't usually give rise to so much hierarchy.
So when you write A there, it means this is of order.
Yeah, it's the same order. It's of course not factorizable. So all these letters are of the same. If I have the same letter, then they are all of the same order. But okay. Let me just okay. So if these are the QLs, they all three come from the same sector. But the right-handed split in such a way that two come from one sector and the other one comes from the other one, then I get such a U-cover texture pattern. And I can go on and on. And I see, well, here I will get two different scales. Here I will also generically get two different scales. Here I will get three different scales. Here I will get three different scales. And here I will get also three different scales. So let me I'm just saying that all these letters carry different global U1 charge. So all these couplings itself have maybe I'm too confusing. So clearly, let's say like this is perturbably realized. Then this one, since it carries a different global U1 charge, is going to be perturbably forbidden. So it has to be induced by an instanton. Is that clear?
So how is this different from some generalized Froebel-Nielsen kind of?
I'm sorry.
How is this different from some general Froebel-Nielsen kind of?
I don't think it's any different. I'm just saying that the I don't think there's any big difference. I'm just saying that now we know that the instantons can actually give rise to such a hierarchy.
So to understand it completely, only the A couplings are due to perturbatively allowed couplings.
Yeah.
And the B, C, and D are all perturbatively forbidden.
Exactly.
Due to,
but they also carry different U global U1 charge. So it's definitely this instanton might be another one than this one.
It's a different instanton.
Exactly.
And so on and so on.
So a priori, since they have a different origin, I could say like they have also maybe different hierarchy. I mean, I know that. Is that clear?
So it's a different families are arising from the sections of different brains. They're different,
exactly.
Yeah.
How many Higgs's do you actually want?
I just have one. One Higgs pair.
You have one Higgs pair.
Yeah.
Okay, so then in that case, you have some topics related, but there's analytic questions which are more Higgs again.
I agree, but I was sticking to the MSSM, right?
So there was some
I'm just saying this is a mechanism to get hierarchies. I'm not saying this is the only one.
There's a special meaning why the first three are in first three matrices are in black and the other three are in
yeah. So here I get only one hierarchy. Here I get two hierarchies for these two, but I want to get three hierarchies, right? So the blue ones are special in the sense that in this case I get three different hierarchies, which I want.
I'm a little bit colorblind, but hopefully I got it correctly.
What about the red one?
Okay, good. So crucial thing is that once I have such a family splitting, I can. I mean, here I don't have any family splitting. I don't expect any hierarchy, but unless I'm taking into account Rolle-Sheet instantons, which I want to ignore for the time being, I expect that all these Rolle-Sheet instantons are of the same order. And this is my assumption here. Actually, for leptons, I can split all three families in such a way that I get even such a weird U-cover texture. And again, I don't even have to populate all of these entries in order to get three hierarchies.
I have a question.
Sure.
To some extent, you say the worksheet instantons you discard them because there, the volume appears in some way. When you want to get a hierarchy, the volume of your
I completely agree. I just want to see. I want to see what other mechanisms are out there. I'm not saying I'm not ignoring completely this. You will see that they play a crucial role after all. Okay, but there's another mechanism which can give me such mass hierarchies. Again, let me do it on an example to do it really. So we have again like this coupling, but now instead of having just one field, I have two fields. And we just saw before an O1 instanton, a rigid O1 instanton with such intersection pattern can induce that coupling. And so again, I'm going to compute the interaction term with the instanton modes and the matter fields. And if I compute that, then I will get such a four-point coupling. I integrate over all the zero modes, and I will see that I get such a mass term, mass matrix, I'm sorry. And since this term here is not going to factorize, there's no reason if I ignore Wolchian instantons. I mean, this is Wolchian, carries some Wolchian instanton. But I expect all these K families, all these K mass eigenstates to be of the same order, right? But now, instead of using an instanton which has only chiral intersection, I might have an instanton which has an additional vector-like intersection. So then, my interaction term between the charged modes and the matter fields looks slightly different. I also have these three-point couplings. And if I now integrate over all my zero modes, then first of all, my vector-like zero modes are going to appear in the measure. And I have to integrate them. And I see that the mass matrix actually factorizes. So what happens is, not all K families get a mass, but only one. And if I actually want to give masses to all the other families, then I need another K1 of that type to get these masses. And I get so all these instantons are going to wrap a different cycle, so they have a different they have a different suppression factor. So a priori, what could happen is that with these instantons, I can get a hierarchy between different families. Is that clear?
But if the space is isotropic, wouldn't you expect that all these volumes are the same?
All these instantons. I agree. This is already true for the other one.
I think there's no true distinction between Wolchian instanton.
Okay.
This time instanton is just this one over GS vector. The argument that the perturbative regime space time instantons are even more suppressed than Wolchian instantons.
Exactly.
You might argue for it.
And that's what I want to argue. But, okay, this was already true for the other entries.
To get hierarchies, large hierarchies you can get with space time instantons, I would say, and small hierarchies, factors of.
I completely agree with you. But first of all, you have a hierarchy between the highest family and the lowest family of 10 to the minus 5, right? So you will even see that it's very tough. I mean, if I just want to use these mechanisms, and I agree, of course, like I have to assume that here is some. I mean, okay, I completely agree.
I'm still a little confused. Can you go back to these matrices which you have shown on the previous transparency? So when you say, let's pick the first one, which is the simplest one. Yeah. You say there's no hierarchy in this matrix.
Yeah.
I'm still confused because now you have to diagonalize the matrix. And then it's obvious to see that the matrix is a rank 1.
No.
So the eigenvalues are 0, 0,
no,
1.
Okay.
And there's already a dramatic hierarchy in this matrix.
Yeah.
And then you have to disturb it to get further hierarchy.
But that's exactly what Hans-Peter was asking me before.
Yeah.
When I said this is A, that doesn't mean that all these numbers are A. They are of the order A. That's what I said. So
if they're of order A, then there is at least one big eigenvalue and further smaller eigenvalues, or not?
No.
The difference among those things is of the same order, right? And it's not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's. Yeah. Well, there is this issue of, the instantons have this 1 over G string.
More
dramatic effect.
But that's what I completely agree with Ralf. Ralf is saying, actually, to get an order of 1/100 using D instantons for that is kind of, why do you do that? You can use Wolchian instantons.
And these matrices stand for both up and down for view coupling couplings.
Exactly. I'm completely, and you will see actually our, if we just wanted, would use those things and our systematic analysis, you're going to see that this is not preferred case, so we want to even use
both. So in some models, can it be that the up quark is of the up quark matrix is of type say Y1 and the down quark is of a different type, or how is separation between the up and the down quark sector?
Okay, so if you have, if you have this one for the up quark, then what is possible is this one from the down quark, this one from the down quark, and this one from the down quark.
Okay,
so what I want to do is like the QLs I'm writing down here.
There's a correlation between the up and down quark.
There is a correlation.
Not displayed here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. All I want to do is I want to just present these as potential origins for getting some hierarchy. I'm not saying this is the one we're going to get. And that's the only way we're going to get them. Let me just tell you, for these things to get a hierarchy, the right-handed quarks has to transform as intersymmetric. Otherwise, you never get a factorizable Newcomer matrix. Anti-symmetrics on the SU3, I'm sorry. All right, so next thing we want to do is basically checking how generic are these mechanisms to get the hierarchies. Furthermore, we also wanted to do actually just to see like a start with a quiver, putting these top down constraints, so these global consistency constraints, and then requiring various things such as absence of R parity, which I told you in the very beginning we see in the MSSM, just to see how many of these quivers have to be ruled out because an instanton which induces some of the Yukawa couplings which we want might also induce an R parity violating coupling. And again, we want to see if we can get such hierarchies but by just these two mechanisms. Okay, there's some previous work or related work on simple similar approaches, and let me just tell you what really our systematic analysis was. So again, we have some top-down constraints which arise from tadpole cancellation. This again translates into, and forget about this part, translates into some transformation behavior for the chiral matter, and which is the usual anomaly cancellation. Again, we also want to have a massive U1 hybrid charge. So we want to have at least one U1 surviving, which we can interpret as a hybrid charge. And again, like that translates, which is actually condition on the cycles, translates into a condition on the transformation behaviors of the matter fields. Again, these are just necessary conditions, not really sufficient. Once you really go into Calabi-Yau and have your cycles, then you have to check that these cycles really, you have to actually ensure that the cycles preserve these or satisfy these conditions. Okay, but now what are our bottom-up constraints? So first thing, what we want to do is we want to restrict ourselves to the exact chiral MSSM spectrum. So no additional exotics. And what I mean by exotics is really under the D-brain symmetry, gauge symmetry exotics. So even though they are maybe uncharged under the standard model symmetries, there might be some chiral fields between two D-brains, which are not charged under the standard model symmetries, which are chiral from D-brain sector, but I want to forbid those. I'm allowing for right-handed quarks to transform as antisymmetric under the SU3, and for the right-handed leptons to transform as right-handed under the SU2 or symmetric. So I'm allowing for symmetric or antisymmetric tensors. I require that the MSSM superpotential, or we require that the MSSM superpotential is realized in, for all three families. So in case there's some coupling missing, we require that it's generated non-perturbatively. So if there's a coupling perturbatively forbidden, we require that an instanton is there which generates that.
Could I just ask, so sure. A is SU3?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
SU2?
SU2, and these are U1s if I have a force tag.
What does the symmetric under U1 mean, charge 2?
I'm sorry?
What does the symmetric under U1? What does...
Yeah, okay, it's... okay. It's a singlet, right? Charge 2, yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. And charge 2, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay.
Sorry. I'm confused about the first condition. What would, perturbatively or non-perturbatively, any term has to be realized. What would happen if one of them is simply zero?
Then I would say an instanton has to be there. Again, like that's...
There is absolutely no instanton whatsoever in the whole.
Then I would rule. Well, okay. So I'm since I'm not working in any global compactification, I don't have a Calabi-Yau, so I don't even know if there's an instanton there or not. What I want to say is, there must be something which induces this coupling.
Simply
so there should be an instanton.
You say simply because it's allowed, there must be something that induces it.
No. I'm saying like because I want to have it.
It should be phenomenologically viable. Right?
Exactly.
No, but I mean if one entry in a Calabi-Yau in a Yukawa matrix.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. So I want to have three different mass eigenvalues. So I it's true that the Yukawa textures there could be some zeros, which
okay,
I also said.
Okay.
Okay.
So how do you know there are couplings there if you don't know the model?
Okay, here I assume whatever is not forbidden by some selection rule is going to be there.
So if the gain conditions on intersection number of one instantons, it would then generate the missing couplings. It's against an intersection number.
Something could be a principle allowed and just that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, if the Calabi-Yau has some specific symmetry, then, you know, various things can be forbidden, even though generically you would assume it's there. But I'm here assuming that it's a generic Calabi-Yau, nothing special happens, and of course, that could always. Okay, I also, since there's a hierarchy between the top Yukawa, the top quark mass and all other masses, I require that the top Yukawa coupling is at least is there and perturbably realized. And I also don't want to have any r-parity violating coupling. So not on perturbative level, but also none of the instantons which I might need it here to generate the MSSM superpotential induces for me any r-parity violating coupling. That seems that turns out to be very, very stringent constraint. I also want to get small neutrino masses.
So when you mean allowed couplings, you mean really dimension 4 operators, not dimension 5 operators?
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing here, when you write there the neutrino masses, that's a dimension 5 operator.
Yeah, okay. Here I don't know, what is, for the Majorana mass, I mean, here I don't have any, this is an effective dimension 5 operator, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what is your concern?
So you say when something is perturbatively allowed, you say it's only... the dimension 4 operators, which are allowed, the dimension 5 operators are forbidden. For example, for baryon and lepton numbers,
yeah.
You know, the higher dimension operators.
Yeah, I'm going to come to them, these dimension 5 operators, which are dangerous. I'm going to forbid those. I'm going to come to them.
Suppressed. You don't say forbidden.
It has to be highly suppressed, very, very highly suppressed. So what is going to happen is that the instanton which induces some of these, it's going to be perturbatively absent.
Okay.
And
perturbatively
it's absent, yeah. And whatever induces the Yukawa matrix also shouldn't induce this coupling because it has to be really highly suppressed. Okay, but now I skipped a little bit forward. Okay, yeah, I just want to go back. Okay, so I want to I want to make sure that I have small neutrino masses. And in this first search, we looked for, we allowed for three right-handed neutrinos. So a natural thing would be to impose the seesaw mechanism. So we want to also have such a coupling or such a coupling and the presence of a Dirac mass term. Again, these instanton should not induce any of the upper Dewalian couplings. But it could be also other, it could be that actually the Dirac neutrino mass term is perturbatively forbidden, and it is realized by non-perturbative effect, where the suppression factor of the instanton is really large, and therefore the Dirac neutrino mass naturally accounts already for the smallness of the neutrino mass. That's actually a paper by Paul Langecker and Mew. But anyway, so the Mew term, we require that the Yukawa couplings, which actually generate some of the instantons, does not generate at the same time the Mew term. Sorry, I said that wrong, right? The instanton which generates one of the Yukawa couplings doesn't induce also the Mew term, because otherwise the Mew term would be much too large. Remember that the Yukawa coupling, I want to have only a suppression of 10 to the minus 5. I can lower the string scale, but I don't want to consider that for the time being. So that already also rules out a large class of ones.
So you're now still with
assuming
relatively large string scale. Otherwise you could, right?
And then you have thousands to potentially, yeah. That's true. Okay. In that case, if I lower the string scale a lot, then I don't get the neutrino mass, Majorana mass in the right scale anymore. So I don't want to do that. Also, I want to make sure that the CKM matrix can be at least, I mean, realized without too much fine-tuning. So that it could look like kind of realistic. And then also, I don't want to have any instantons realizing, which I need here for this business, apart from this instanton, because that is a highly suppressed, I'm sorry, for this instanton. This might be a highly suppressed instanton. This might suppress it highly enough that I can allow for those dimension 5 operators. But all other instantons, which I might have to use in order to get some of the MSSM superpotential couplings, I don't want to induce any of these dimension 5 operators, which could lead to too fast proton decay. So what we see is we start with these curvers, which satisfy these top-down constraints. And we get up to 10,000 four-stack curves with this spectrum, but only 30 pass through these bottom-up constraints. So that's already a huge, huge class which is ruled out. Also, we don't find any in these four-stack classes which give rise to the hierarchy without using Wolff-Schmidt instantons. So just using the two mechanisms. For the five-stack quiver, we found five setups which set us up all the bottom-up constraints as well as the top-down constraints. There were 1 million of top-down constraints, of order 1 million, which gives us the desired hierarchy just using these two mechanisms I presented before. So that already tells us that Wolff-Schmidt instantons play definitely a crucial role in getting hierarchies.
So does the top down here mean like global
Global tadpole condition and that I have a massless C1 hypercharge that I count as a global constraint?
Okay, so then you follow up with since Bert's on the paper, I guess this might involve get models of some kind.
What's it?
since Bert's on the paper,
yeah.
I guess it might involve get the models.
No, but Bert is not involved.
Okay.
Ala, yeah, okay. So there's no, we didn't find any global realization of those. This is just, I'm just saying that Bert did a similar study where he actually looked at global conditions. But he also started out with a local setup and then trying to find also tadpole solutions to that.
So do you have global models?
No, I don't have any global models. All I want to say is, start out with a quiver, and you cannot just take a random quiver. It turns out, like, phenomenology already tells you that there's a huge class which is, you don't even have to consider.
So the top-down constraints, those are... I think
it's
a global tadpole.
But that's what I tried to tell you. The top-down constraints are constraints on the cycles, but they actually imply some constraints on the transformation behavior of your chiral matter. That's the condition I'm putting on. That doesn't say anything about the... I don't have to specify for that the Calabi-Yau, right? So it's again, like, it's ultra-local, and if you want.
Necessary.
It's a necessary condition.
If you don't have this dark spectrum, they would definitely have tadpoles.
Okay.
But you don't have really full global embedding.
What is the condition that the 10,000 deep brain stacks satisfy? What is the condition that the 30 that survives and satisfy exactly?
Okay, so the top-down constraints are the ones which are called tadpole constraints, which give you some transformation maybe on the meta field, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I have also the masses, that I have a massless hypercharge that also puts constraints on the transfer. These are the 10,000 models.
They're yours.
They're not mine.
No, it's not. It's again, like, not that I actually just specify the debound state, the brain bound state. I don't specify anything like that. But already just what I'm telling you, the intersection number is clear.
About 10,000. Where does it come from? From you or from us? Or
from us.
Okay.
It doesn't come from you, yeah. I mean, okay.
For example, you did some bottom-up analysis similar to that, right? Maybe not as what, you know.
Yeah, okay, actually.
But the point is, I don't think you constrain right-handed neutrinos. So in our case, if you put this as an additional input, that it's only the spectrum of MSSM plus 3 right-handed neutrinos.
I guess these 10,000 correspond to your infinity, if you want.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm confused now.
Yeah, okay.
They have constructed some models. Did you construct some models?
No, I didn't construct any models.
So what does this 10,000 mean?
10,000 means I'm just giving you some intersection numbers. I specify how the chiral spectrum transforms under the D-brain stacks.
I'm confused about the word, about the word top down. It sounds as if you've actually constructed them as...
None of them exist.
No, okay, but if you look at the singularity, put the deep brain stack on the singularity. So of course, like, you require anomaly cancellation, right? Yes, okay. Do you call that now a construction of a global, do you call these anomaly cancellation a top-down constraint or a bottom-up constraint?
Well, the way we use top-down means that they satisfy all that we have.
I agree. I mean, but I said from the very beginning, I'm not considering here any global construction.
No, but you're using a language which confuses
you. You could have started with the 30 models, and then they would have...
Okay. It's not that you can actually do random things.
What you said. He's putting in necessary condition that you don't violate type tadpoles and that you don't have mass if you want. Those are necessary. It would be better if he said necessary condition. They are not in clear violation. Okay?
But where do these 10,000 models come from?
This restricts the spectrum very much if you stick to the spectrum. It has to be MSSM plus 0.
Yeah, I understand. But how do you...
Okay.
Take one model and tell me how you construct it. One of the 10,000.
Let me see if I can... tell you...
Madrid model would be one of them.
Okay. So...
Madrid model would be one.
The Madrid model would be one, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just saying that, for example, all the left-handed quarks could arise from the SU2, they could all transform as AB bar, right? They could all arise from this sector. If this is U2 and the U3 stack, they could all arise from here. I'm saying if I stick to that convention, then I cannot randomly say, like, all the other ones can also arise from wherever they want. There's some conditions how these fields transform under the D-brain gauge symmetry. Not the standard model gauge symmetry, the D-brain gauge symmetry. Is that clear or not?
But at what point during string theory, can I do this discussion purely in field theory?
Yes.
Yeah.
Statistics of
no, it's the same.
No, no, no. But okay, there's a crucial thing. No, but okay, but there's clearly. I mean, in deep brain model building, I have these global U1s, right? So of course I can have them also somewhere else. But I'm not saying anything more, right? Okay. So confusing, or?
Is that what you call top down? Is it the same as we call bottom up in our paper?
I guess I'm not sure what you call bottom up, but it might be. I'm not.
Maybe
sure.
Just write down top down constraints.
Can you just go back?
Write the constraints.
Okay, yeah. Let me just go back. Okay. So there's a condition on the cycles, and I completely agree that I have to specify Calabi-Yau in order to do that. I'm sorry. Where's my tadpole cancelling?
Here. Just
no, we don't have.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's my tadpole cancellation. And now what I'm doing, should I do it on the other blackboard? So, of course, if I want to satisfy that condition, then I have to specify some cycles, I have to specify Calabi-Yau, clearly, I'm not arguing with that. Now, this implies some conditions on the transformation paper. Now, what I do is multiply that with a random stack with another D-brain. That implies some transformation behavior. And it's trivial. It's for the usual non-abelian gauge symmetry. That means it's just an anomaly cancellation. But for the U1, it means a little bit more. Also for the same I'm doing for the having a massless hypercharge. That's also another condition. So it's not like I can randomly write down whatever I want. This is what I call top-down constraints.
Yeah, and that's what we call bottom-up.
And that's maybe what you call bottom-up. All right.
No, I wouldn't call it a top-down constraint.
Because this is just you impose anomaly cancellation. You take your model, you take your quiver, yeah. And then you say, I impose an anomaly cancellation and massless hypercharge.
Okay, let me actually, I mean, I mean, I don't know if there was a confusion that I was saying something wrong.
But if it's a constraint, it would be completely mysterious from low energy physics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. If we would only know standard model physics, we would not figure out that there is this constraint.
Out of these 10,000 models, do you have models which have
10,000 models satisfy this condition as well as the other condition with the massless hypercharge? These are the 10,000. Now I'm putting on top of it.
For example, don't have anomalies.
Exactly.
By the way, what cuts off the infinity that you mentioned earlier?
What
cuts it down to 10,000 from infinity?
Because I'm sticking exactly to the chiral MSSM plus 3 right hand neutrinos and no additional chiral exotics under the D-brain gauge symmetry. You have additional singlets.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't have these additional segments. And this is, of course, I don't want to argue. Of course, we expect more singlets. I'm sorry. I want to switch off the light. Okay. You can allow for additional singlets, then you get more. Yeah. I'm not saying much. Okay. Good, I hope it's clear what I'm doing. Still, I want to stress the point, you start out with 10,000 models and you reduce it to a number of 30. Just by basically not actually requiring too much. I mean, not putting too detailed terminology in there. I just basically require that I don't have dimension 5 operators and I don't have any r-parity violating couplings. Right? That's not that much. And still, it already puts it down. Okay. Still, and here's something we learn. What is the general lesson and what we might learn from this thing? What we saw is, first of all, these different families seem to actually rise from the same deep brain sector. Right? So if you look how often they're actually distributed from different sectors, then they see it tends to be they arise all from the same sector. Moreover, also the right-handed quarks are rather not realized as anti-symmetrics. So basically, what I told you before about these two mechanisms which realize hierarchies via Dien symptons, they rather seem to be suppressed, which we also saw, right? We saw like for 5 seconds, we found five setups where we get actually all the hierarchies we wanted to begin with. So out of a million. So, okay.
So the right-hand quarks are not anti-symmetric.
Anti-symmetric under the SU3.
Under the SU3, so
they are the complex. They're rather bifundamentals, yeah.
And you can't have a Yukawa coupling of dimension 4 otherwise. And you would need extra neutral fields.
That's yeah. Usually why the proper Yukawa coupling is forbidden in SU3.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, let me stress again. Maybe it's not clear what I'm saying. It's not because this coupling is not there, but I need an instanton to induce that in that case, and this instanton is going to induce something bad for me as well. It's going to induce some dimension 5 operator or some operator violating in the generic case. I'm not saying like there's anything bad about the fact that the right-handed quark is realized as antisymmetric. Even if the coupling, Yukawa coupling is not there, I don't have a problem with that.
You see, I have the feeling that in these models, what in some way is different than from models which, let's say, come from the current universe, that when you generically look at these things, very often the operative violating operators are loud, and some of the Yukawa couplings which you want are forbidden.
That's if you do a top-down.
That happens in many of these models.
Sure.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So you then first of all have to forbid the R-parity violating, and then even you see the top quark is already small compared.
Sure.
So this is what you, in a certain way, tell a general lesson.
And what I'm saying.
No, it's fine. Yeah.
That's still fine, yeah.
My puzzle resolving this puzzle about this contradiction about these different scales of these operators. Dimension 5, which one don't want to have, and you come up with.
Yeah, but then I really have to. Okay, so dimension 5 operators. Dimension 5 operators have to be really highly suppressed. Yeah? I mean, it's like 10 to the minus 12 in order to. If the string scale is of 10 to the 18 GV. So. Dimension 5 operators, I guess I don't want to go 10 to the minus 8 anyway, but it has to be highly suppressed. Now, and I mean, one can argue, but working on, I would say, like, you get up to the order 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3.
For knowledge,
do
you mean such a high suppression for dimension 5?
10 to the minus 8? Yeah. I mean, we looked it up, yeah. With the string scale, 10 to the 18.
You were very conservative. Yeah.
Keep in mind, here I induce it whether just directly with an. Here I induce it directly with an instanton, right? But so in literature says like 10 to the minus 8. 10 to the minus 12, I'm not sure, but 10 to the minus 8 definitely. It has to be really highly suppressed.
It depends which one is it.
Yes,
well, that's all included.
That's all included, yeah.
No, this is all, yes, but this is.
All right, okay.
So,
sure.
Just one before. You said that. The families tend to arise from the same
deep brain sector.
I thought you said that in order to have hierarchies it was crucial.
Okay. Very good. But also what I said. So there are two mechanisms which I presented to you, right? Family splitting, which you're referring to get hierarchy, and this factorizable thing. Both of these things, even though they seem to be fine at first sight, once we do the statistics, we see like the moment you have these different things, you rather induce then also operating valine couplings. So you don't want that. So what I'm saying is, these two mechanisms which I presented to you as getting hierarchies are rather suppressed. So they are not the most crucial things to get hierarchies. The most crucial things are going to be the Wolff-Wiedlin symptoms.
Then it means that all the Yukawa couplings will arise from instantons. Not
No, all of these instantons are going to arise from on perturbative level, right? All I'm saying is that the hierarchies rather come from Wolff-Wiedlin instantons. So what's happening? What is
your most preferred case, right?
Is it the one is the most preferred case, exactly. So what I'm saying is, this is rather the most preferred. After doing the systematic analysis,
this happens more often.
That happens more often. I mean, I'm not saying that it's the most preferred. I mean, I'm not saying that it's the only thing which happens, but it's the most preferred one. I presented to you two mechanisms to get hierarchies, and I'm saying the systematic analysis rather showed that this is rather suppressed.
Yeah, but you had an extra mechanism at the beginning which you decided to discard for some other technique.
Because this we know anyway. This mechanism we know anyway. This was a mechanism which you can get, but then you have to really look carefully how your Wolff-Wiedlin instantons are going to go.
Well, let's talk about the high-dimensional operators with extra mutual scalars. You threw those away at the beginning because you didn't like any
component. Oh, no, but they are equally bad. I mean, this is on
They're not equally bad.
No, it's the same as with the instantons. They are not working. I mean, you're talking about higher dimensional operators. That's equally bad as instantons.
It's not equally bad. I have models where that actually make it happen, and actually you get very good stuff out of it, like an axiom, which is in the right window.
Okay, I mean, but I'm just saying, you know, if you use here an instanton or a singlet to induce this coupling, then you use, if this B gets induced by an instanton which generates for you an operative violating coupling, then the singlet will also induce for you an operative violating coupling, right? So I don't see really why the singlet should be better than instanton.
Because you get all the
low-energy
physics that you can
get. Okay, these entries here, right? They carry some global U1 charge. I'm saying I compensate for those with the instanton. You say you compensate for those with the singlet. All right.
With the web, yes. And then
with the web, fair enough. Okay,
extra.
I'm saying now more often it's going to happen that the instanton has this very same instanton is going to induce another coupling, which I don't want, which has exactly the same U1 global charge. Now, I don't see why this doesn't work for the
perturbative standard coupling on the string, and therefore the ones that you don't want, like proton decay, can still be suppressed by the usual arguments that they were generated by instantons. The point is that this is not generated by instantons. The ones that will be generated by an instanton
but the singlet, the singlet,
are arbitrarily tiny.
But the singlet is also going to induce the same coupling for you, which is bad. I don't see why you say, like, you want to induce the bad coupling with an instanton, but the good coupling with a singlet. Why is it not the other way around?
We better make the charge by the singlet.
Yeah.
But they behave differently because the singlet is still subject to the constraints that it comes from D-brains. So a lot of the couplings that one might write randomly are still forbidden.
No, okay, if you talk about a particular color of yaw which has some symmetry, which then forbids for some reason that this singlet doesn't induce
the
better.
Some of the couplings are still forbidden because they will involve an epsilon tensor or something like that.
But then you impose an additional symmetry, which I'm fine with. I mean, I'm not saying if the color of yaw.
You have these global symmetries, you have a lab, the lab breaks the symmetry,
okay.
And then there's in principle an instanton that would also be direct breaking of that symmetry.
Okay, let's talk about particular coupling. Let's say like you get like this coupling, which has some charge Q, global charge yes. Q. So now you say like this charge has the same charge Q.
Yeah.
If you want to induce this with the singlet, why is the singlet not also coupling to this thing?
The singlet will couple to that thing yeah. in the bottom.
Yeah.
And the difference is that the one in the bottom has an epsilon symbol, so that one has to be generated non-perturbatively, whereas the one on the top could just be an ordinary.
Why is that an epsilon symbol? I don't see that.
Because you have three Qs. To make that a singlet of QCD, that requires an epsilon symbol of QCD.
Yeah, but it's an epsilon, but the phi doesn't carry the epsilon tensor, so
no, it's an epsilon. The QQQ that tells you already that that will be only generated by an instanton, and you will have an extra suppression on that same coupling.
Okay, fair enough. Then, okay, I agree. Okay, that is the point that, okay, that's not a good example, but let's do then this example. How do you deal with that one?
Well, phi will also have R parity, so.
But this is. Yeah, but that is an additional symmetry you put in. That's the point. You put. I agree, if your Calabi-Yau has for some reason some geometrical symmetry, which treats this coupling different than this one, all right, then this whole analysis, of course, is not true anymore, right? If there's an additional symmetry. But what we said, like, let's talk about the most generic case, and you don't have any additional symmetry. Okay. Okay. Another thing is what we did is playing the same game, but now inducing the Weinberg operator directly with an instanton. And basically, we run this same thing. Oh, first thing, of course, to notice is that the string theory has to be low in that case. Otherwise, you get two small neutrino masses. So,
a common here which I think applies to a lot of these instanton makers, because the same thing's often done. I mean, the string scale in superpotential is not a holomorphic quantity. So, that you I mean, in superpotential, you never have 1 over m string, because it's just not holomorphic with respect to the moduli. And, I mean, with high string scales, it isn't so much of a difference, but with low string scales, I think the scale, the suppression scale that appears is kind of significantly different from m string. And for low string scales, it's important to be taking this into account.
But I'm doing here an effective field theory, right?
I mean, if you write the string scale, yeah, the string scale is the Planck scale divided by the moduli, and yeah. It's a non-holomorphic function of the moduli. So, as a superpotential operator, yeah, as a dimension for four-term and superpotential,
okay,
yeah, you can't have 1 over m string in there. I mean, it's not just here, but I've seen this again and again and again in this literature.
Yeah, you want to M Planck there. All right. Okay.
But if it's a very incompact case, well, won't it be a KK scale?
Yeah, no, I'm also worried.
But the KK scale is also non-holomorphic. Because it's like it's M Planck over T plus T bar.
Do you really want to be M Planck there?
Well, you have to have M Planck, and then you have factors in the Kaler potential that when you put them together to the physical scale compensate to some degree. But I think they don't compensate. They don't give you back M string, or at least supergravity doesn't suggest they don't get back M string. But you get back sort of different scales. So, but when the string scale's low, I think this kind of matters because you then got orders of magnitude.
But it's not just the first term in the zeta function. This is the first Kunze climber. Really, you have to integrate all Kunze climbers, and then you add up simply into some zeta function that presumably depends on more.
Well, if you're writing an effective term in the effective supergravity, which is a superpotential, then you can't have M string, and you can have another whole thing with the Kaler potential, and they compensate it to a certain degree. But
the point isn't just that the expansion of the zeta function, the first term, is something like 1 over the compactification scale, and then there are more terms. But we're stupid field theorists, and we only write on the first term.
Where do these extra terms come from?
There's not just one Kluser Klein node, right? You always have a tower of Kluser Klein nodes, and then you have to add over, you really have to add over all of them. but we're just estimating some limit of that.
So isn't it like e to the minus volume or something? If you're talking a solution term instead of that, that gives the overall denominator much larger, right? The numerator e to the minus volume.
Is, so that's the e to the minus s, is it?
No. No, this is instant control. The way you would want from the right hand stream.
In terms
of any plank, and e to the minus v or something of that type.
E to the minus v.
Or t modulus.
But that's
about the volume part.
That's the instant control. E to the minus t is the instant control.
No, this is the instant
control, not modulus. So, the e to the minus t always looks like this.
You're talking how you trade this, this denominator for n Planck and some function of modulus.
It's n Planck over square root of volume. He's not particularly to this, but it's...
So that you should replace in this formula n square root of Planck and multiply by the volume. That's what you're saying. Yeah.
As a superpotential, you can't have square root of volume.
And so this might mean the statement might make sense when you take that into account. Or not.
So the question of what's the superpotential is well defined. I say you can't have
extra.
Maybe it is an extra power of the normalization and it seems to be physical decoupling coupling compared to the other decoupling coupling.
Yeah, except supergravity does suggest it's not M-string.
No, but when you normalize
it,
you will get an extra factor.
Supergravity suggests it's not M-string.
You know, I think you can't talk here.
In theory, you would expect that there is an S. If you do a strong string computation.
Except supergravity, with low string scale, supergravity suggests it's not MS.
What does it suggest?
It gives you this kind of winding scale that it suggests it should be this winding scale that's appeared. Force appears on the center. So
remind me, what does that in terms of M string and volume?
It's M string times the overall radius of the club, yeah.
M string times the overall radius of the Calabian, what units?
It's not local.
But you are talking more about set-out corrections, or not?
It's not Kribber theory. I think you're talking about Kribber.
Well, you have a low string scale, so you have to be doing something like that, otherwise it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Okay. I have to think about it.
Well, the string scale is not a big difference, so we can
disagree. No, but this answer is not for superpotential, right? This is a mass, so he already took into account it was a K over 2, no? Then it naturally got replaced by something else, like MKK maybe. So why are you objecting to the final answer?
Because I don't think the physical scale is the string scale.
I'm not talking about string scale. I'm saying mass Planck was standing on superpotential, as you're saying, yeah. But you also said yourself that in potential, you get some power of it to the scale, yeah. So naturally the answer for mass will have some other scale, which could be KK, for example, or something else.
And I think for local models where you have a low string scale, I don't think that scale is the string scale.
I'm not saying it should be string scale, but I'm saying it should be Planck mass. As you
no, I'm saying the superpotential has to be.
Okay,
like,
but he's not talking about
physical, superpotential. I think in the physical scale, I don't think it's the string scale.
His only point was that it should be small enough, and it could be small enough, probably, right? For him. Anyway.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about that in a minute.
Could you put this in quotation mark and as now, right?
How long do you mean?
Okay. All right. Okay. Let me wrap up quickly. Very quickly. Okay. Also, will we induce the Weinberg operator directly? Which means like we have to lower the string scale. Not sure if it's necessary. No. Again, we get the same results. We, in addition, have the constraint, remember that I told you, if the Yukawa coupling also induces a neutral, then since there's only hierarchy 10 to the minus 5, at most between the Yukawa couplings, string scale might be forced into the TV scale, and now I think then we might have definitely a problem. Good, but basically in the analysis shows again the same pattern, right? Family splitting is also suppressed. Keep in mind now we looked at the MSSM spectrum without writing the neutrinos. So it's a different thing. But again, we see the same pattern as we saw for the other ones. Okay, so, okay, good. Whatever. Should I wrap up quickly? Okay, anyway, we found start out like 10,000 models, and we get like only less than a percent survivors. Try to show you that there are two mechanisms which use d-intentons to get hierarchies. It turns out that they are both suppressed in the systematic analysis. And then we tried to do this with the same Weinberg, where we directly induce a Weinberg operator by a d-intenton. And general lessons is, again, like different families arise from the same sector, right? And it works out productively. Of course, one would like to have a global embedding, as we all know, and good. That's it.